Welcome back to DC Cinematic Minute, the daily podcast in which we analyze Zack Snyder's Justice League by each individual minute. My name is Mark. You can find me on all social media at Mark Meadows.
And my name is Nathan. You can find me on all social media at No Clutch Nate.
And we're here today to talk about minute 215, which is now a different chapter of the movie. It's epilogue, A Father Twice Over. The minute's going to start with a fade out of the Justice League and their heroic moment from yesterday and the day before. And then the minute is going to end with Cyborg smiling as he hears his father's words. It's very nice minute. It's a nice little fade out to close chapter 6. And then we have a whole new chapter to talk about today for the next 29 minutes.
Yeah. And the last title card that we're going to see.
Yeah. Aww.
Aww.
Closing things out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Closing
and
up,
it's an epilogue,
up
so I don't know. Like, what were you talking about yesterday? It being 214, that's the cut, and like that's where the movie ends. It's like, yeah, well, I know you're right because I just had to do it. Like, by each minute, and the movie did end at 2:14. But here we go. We got a second part. We got a, as what
I
they
mean,
call it. They call it an epilogue. I don't know if you knew that.
So there isn't there is one a little bit. So yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm talking about Man of Steel right now. So in Man of Steel, there's a little bit of that, right? General Zod dies. Superman's crying. Fade to black. There's a bit of a time skip, and now Superman is Superman, and Northcom is like, hey, you should fall in line. And he's like, I'm not going to do that. And then he goes, works at the Daily Planet, and they say, welcome to the planet. It's like, ooh, ah, like, nice little, soft closing as we kind of like get ready for another film.
Wouldn't think that Man of Steel, I wouldn't consider that being, it was just the end of the movie. That wasn't in any way like an epilogue.
It is a little bit. It is a little bit. I mean, you're talking about a story that ends and it's like, well, we have to kind of tee up the next one. So that's where the epilogue comes in, because it's like, well, we want to know what's going to happen now with his life. What's the aftermath of that? The aftermath is that US Northcom is like, hey, you're still kind of like unilateral, like,
yeah, but there, he's also object. Talking. He's also back at home talking to Martha, and she's like, "What are you gonna do now?" And he's like, "I gotta keep my ear to the ground."
That's exactly what the epilogue is. What are you gonna do now? Like, what are you gonna do after all this is over? What I'm saying is that Man of Steel isn't too long, and this is obviously the longest one, but then Dawn of Justice, it's like part of, it's hard to say that it even is an epilogue, because it's pretty much the message of the story. The Dawn of Justice, the ultimate cut, is like everything that happens in that epilogue. It's like,
what are you considering the epilogue?
His funeral and all that. And like, they're talking about like, I failed him in death. I failed him in life. I won't fail him in death, kind of thing. That's still part of the main story. I it's hard to say, because there are little things that are foreshadowing another movie, which is this movie that we're talking about, but it doesn't come at the very end of the movie. It's kind of like peppered into that final little piece. So as I'm just kind of comparing Man of Steel, Dawn of Justice, and Justice League as far as like what their little epilogues go.
Yeah.
And this one is just way more stuff. But this part here, this father twice over, this little speaking bit, even if the movie was 214 minutes, this needs to be in the movie. Like, this is so important to being in the movie. Obviously, with like Cyborg being such a huge part of the movie, like, this has to be in there. And obviously, If you've seen the theatrical cut, this is not in here. It's this is the Lois Lane talking about darkness and
no, yeah, you remember he light. All he does is take off the sweats and he's just like looking at like the robot body and everybody, and I think it's just like him and Flash, and Flash is like, you're doing
no, it's his dad. His dad's still alive.
That's right, dad's still alive. Dad's alive. And yeah, his dad, he's like, check it out, right? As if like you haven't already been studying this entire thing, like since you chose to do this, but I look pretty neat, right? And then he goes and flies. And that's it. Dunzo.
Yeah. He doesn't even... does he fly? I don't even know that he flies.
Doesn't he do the fly on the... It's nighttime. He's on the rooftop and he...
No, that was
that in the movie? Learn to Fly by Foo Fighters place?
That was earlier in this movie, and that was a deleted scene that was being leaked around the internet before the Snyder Cut had come out. No, we had never seen that.
This is so confusing. I'm so sorry. People are screaming at me. People are like, don't you even like this movie anymore? You know,
it's a big movie.
Sometimes. Come hang out and actually ask me one-on-one and I'll tell you all about it. But
that's going to happen when Rebel Moon comes out and like, when I eventually watch like the PG-13 version, it's gonna happen again where I'm just like, sorry, I'm not like a robot who knows immediately like, oh yeah, this part's in this movie, this version, this part's in the other version. Like, I'm gonna see the rated R version first, and then I'm gonna see the PG-13 version. And at some point I'm gonna be like, wait, wasn't this in that version? And it's like, it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. Anyways.
I think I would still get surprised if you told me I don't even know anymore about Lord of the Rings and like the extended edition versus came on home DVD back in 2000 or whatever.
I was literally so a few months ago I was having that conversation with my partner and I was just like, doesn't this part happen in this version? And she was like, no, that's the extended version. I was like, okay, well, I don't feel like I've seen the extended edition enough, but there are just some parts that I just feel like I've always remembered.
Yeah.
And that's when...
I know in the Fellowship, it's like they actually see Bilbo's trolls.
Yeah.
That was extended.
Like, that was like, yeah, that's like one of the most memorable parts. But I'm talking
about... That's like the only one. The people are other people, even a whole another group are screaming at me.
Yeah, there's a whole other group screaming at me now. I'm so sorry. When you ask me Lord of the Rings questions on the spot, like I lose track of every name of every person.
The people
Okay, so who the king who had Thranduil, like the sword, and it got stepped on by Sauron and it broke, and then his son.
Yeah.
He sealed
the door.
Isildur. Yes. Yeah. Okay. God, I hate this.
No, I hear you.
They say Lord of the Rings lore is the first thing to go when you have early onset dementia.
Yeah.
It's the first thing to go. The part where he dies, like he's like on horseback, right, and they get like ambushed. I always thought that was part of the original cut, and we're watching the original theatrical cut, and that doesn't happen. And I was like, wait, they're not gonna show him dying?
Like in the beginning,
yeah. Remember
of
where
the
like
Fellowship when Galadriel's telling the story.
Yeah.
Is that they what usually happens? Does that happen?
See, that's what I'm saying. I'm just using a stupid example.
Yeah,
it took a lot of brain power to get that example out there. I'm sorry, but man, there are just times where I cannot remember which version has which little bit piece that I'm. It's just melded together. There's only when things are contradicting do I know the difference. And this Lois Lane voiceover with the cyborg Silas Stone voiceover, Dr. Silas Stone, excuse me, is when I'm like, obviously I remember that difference, because the Lois Lane bit that Amy Adams had to say was just so bad, so out of context, so like it didn't even fit with like what the story was. It was so generic. It was almost like an AI wrote it.
I don't even remember it.
Don't even something remember about like only true light can pierce the darkness. And it's like, what are you even saying? Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, right. She's writing a paper.
She's writing her next Pulitzer Prize article about Superman coming back. And it was like, who wrote this? Who wrote this part for her to say? And Amy Adams was like, I really don't want to have to say this. This sounds so boring. And she sounds bored saying it.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was just not good. But
here we go with the epilogue. We got about 30 minutes of this thing.
30 minutes. It starts with the, you know, I won't speak on the Justice League. We talked about it for like 2 minutes. It fades out. Starts the epilogue.
The one thing I will say, it's shameful that it bleeds over into this minute too. I'm done. I'm done with it.
Just still going.
I hate that it fades to black in this minute.
You hate that it fades to black?
You hate it. It should have been over. I wanted it to be over yesterday.
Oh, like it would have been a clean cut, like clean, hard minute.
Yeah,
cut.
If we're being like nice. I'm just. It's just stupid. It's just silly. It's just, you know, whatever. It's just action figures. It's just a poster. It's nothing.
It's the poster.
It's not
the
for
first,
me.
It's the first Justice League live action movie, Nate. It's like not you for have. Me. You have to think, you have to really commit to the vision though, Nate. Like, could you imagine people, and I'm sure people, they
what are we doing here? What show is this?
This is DC Cinematic Minute.
Commit to the vision.
Commit to the vision. That's what it is. And so think about like Excalibur, right? With all that beginning part with, you know, Uther Pendragon, right? It would have been like, someone would have been like, come on, we got to cut this out. Just skip to the part where he's, you know, Arthur, it's like this little peasant kid. It's like, no, I'm going to commit to all this long part and throwing the sword into the lake and stuff. It's like, you have to commit to this stuff, my man. And for the Justice League having their first live action movie and having this big, like, anthemic ending.
Yeah.
I think it could have been a little bit prettier. That's all I'll say for dragging it out so long. It could have been more like, could have had, I don't know. Pejornov just didn't. I don't know, not the best backdrop for a Justice League final little moment, I would say, just because it's weird looking. But what I will say is, so in this epilogue where we see, just kind of want to talk about the setting that we're in right now. We're back in the apartment that Dr. Silas Stone and Victor Stone have moved into post the death of him and the wife Eleanor Stone, and we're back here in the apartment, and Cyborg is staring at the cassette player that he tape recorder that he destroyed earlier when he was going through like his little origin first flight moment earlier in the film. And we talked about Metamorphosis. I think the episode was called Metamorphosis. So we're here now. I want to talk just a little bit more about the Lois Lane voiceover from the theatrical cut, because I just kind of want to make, I don't know, a defense for it in any small kind of way. It's not good. I don't agree with it. Could have been slightly racist from someone who was writing the movie post Zack Snyder being fired. Maybe. I'll leave that up to other people to have that kind of discourse. But was there an agenda to make Lois Lane the central character of that Justice League movie? I haven't seen it in so long, so I don't know. But because Lois Lane is the only one of the grouped core cast who doesn't have superpowers, and, you know, it's the death of Superman and stuff, were they trying to make her the heart of the movie?
I don't know. Maybe they were just trying to like wrap it back up to like what Man of Steel did, where it's like, oh yeah, of course it's like a Lois Lane narration.
Yeah, that too, Nate. That works. Yeah. Yeah, she was kind of the center, the linchpin in the last two films. Maybe the third one, they were like, well, Lois Lane obviously has to be the center of attention again. Like, that has to be her thing. Just a little thing to think about.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I think that's the first time I've ever thought about the theatrical version, like, being centered around
and Lois this is what Lane we do here.
And, like, this, her perspective and stuff.
This is DC Cinematic Minute. We have to literally think this for people who don't want to think about it.
Okay. Okay.
But Dr. Silas Stone, I mean, they take things away from Joe Morton, who plays Dr. Silas Stone. I mean, like, this is a big moment between his character and Ray Fisher's character, Victor Stone. And if, you know, if what I was speculating was the honest effort to do for Lois Lane in this version of the film, okay. But yeah, there's this whole golden moment that I really, really like. And I really don't like the Lois Lane stuff that they did in Justice League, the theatrical cut. So I really like this. I really like this tender moment, this thing that we saw earlier in the film where he's like learning about his abilities because he has to. And his father's like, hey, dude, you're going through things. You've got a giant philosopher's stone built in you. Like, you can do some crazy stuff. You've got to get through this. And he's like, yeah, I do need help. And then he's like, also, as a dad, I want to apologize. And he's like, okay, now you can shut up, now you can leave, get the hell out of here, I still hate you.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was still angry as all hell earlier.
Yeah,
when, like, especially when he crushed the tape recorder. I mean, that was purely out of anger.
He just all of a sudden remembers, like, oh, yeah, by the way, I am disgusted by you. Don't try to talk to me as a father, because it's way too late to be trying to do that at this point in time.
And so then you crush the tape recorder. And
crush the tape recorder. And now
you
we're storm here.
Out, you slam the door and you leave.
And now his dad is gone.
Yeah, so now it's like regretfulness. That sucks. I wish I didn't destroy that. But oh, wait, I'm a technological god. Maybe I could do something about it.
And not just cyborg abilities, but this is confirmation that he has mother box technology.
Yeah, this is mother power.
This is mother box.
This is a Transformers-ass power.
It's like all spark power.
Yeah, like, that's insane. I mean, it is mother box power because it is taking, burn the house down. It's
gold,
it's
from
there.
Lead.
It's all just particles and matter.
Yeah. And even, and honestly, I mean, think about it, like, sound waves. Like, the tape recorder is...
Well, I couldn't do it. I'm sorry. I'm cutting that out.
No, you're good. I kind of heard it.
No.
You just have to edit the robot voice in there.
Sound wave...
Okay, I don't know if sound waves sound like that.
No, I'm just just go move on.
To piece together sound waves of your dad's voice on a tape recorder that you shattered and then built it back together. Even that to me is like, that's alchemy. I don't know how that works. I'm sure that obviously there's a scientific way of how sound gets imprinted on a device. But yeah. This is not something a regular cyborg would be able to do. A un-mother box origin cyborg would not be able to do this thing that he's doing here.
No.
This is almost like the first flight thing with, like, the hand and, like, the energy coming around it. But, like, instead of the energy swirling like a Dragon Ball Z thing animation, it's instead rebuilding this cassette tape back together.
Yeah,
which is really cool from a visual effects standpoint of, like, someone having to animate literally a shattered cassette player. Like, they had to go take a tape recorder to a parking lot and smash it and, like, put it on a black table and be like, okay, well, now I've got to take photographs of it. I've got to, like, start animating, or, like, first rendering each piece and then have animation of it coming back into shape. Like, that is truly wild stuff.
It is,
because
pretty wild.
You can't just shatter the cassette player, like a 3D model I keep switching between cassette player and a tape recorder, but, like, shattering it and like there's pieces inside it. Like that's not how 3D modeling works. Like you have to create every single polygon. And so someone had to build a stuffed tape recorder 3D model and then shatter it into pieces and then bring it back together, because they had to do both scenes. They had to do it with him shattering it in his hand. The pieces fall down because they render gravity, and then say, okay, now go in reverse to the pinpoint of this, of an object that'll be here, which is Cyborg's hand. Like from a visual effects standpoint, it's like, that's a lot. That's a lot you're asking for.
That is a lot they're asking for. The sound wave thing you were saying, it's a it's a micro cassette tape, so I think the sound would still be on the actual like tape, like, you know, the reel.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's still like there. It's just not in, you know, the cassette is just, you know, exploded now, like the housing, plastic housing of it. But the tape is probably still there. I don't see it though. I don't know if I can. I'm sure I can go way slow. Slower than anybody would care to even pay attention to or follow along. Yeah, there's pieces of it and stuff. I don't know what the I don't know. I'm not going to tell you that I know the inside makings of a cassette player, but what I will tell you is that this is a Sony M480.
Mm-hmm.
And this recorder was actually made and distributed and sold in 1982, baby.
1982.
That's a familiar number.
That is a familiar number. Why is that a familiar number?
Because that's when Cyborg was created, and then for this movie they made the mother box that government number. Gosh, I can't remember it.
061982.
Yeah.
Or 61982, no zero.
There you go.
61982.
So it's also kind of cool because if you think about it, it's probably the same handheld cassette player, that micro cassette player that Silas was using to record during Victor's accident, right? The whole security cam footage. But that...
The CCTV footage that he recorded. How long
ago? That was only a couple years ago, right? I was thinking, like, he's had that since 1982. Which is still cool.
Yeah, yeah. I could see Dr. Silas. He's had this since 1982. Yeah, this tape recorder. Yeah. That he's had this tape recorder. And so, obviously, he would have had it with him in minute 122 of Dawn of Justice when Wonder Woman is looking through the files because Batman shared it with her and she's in the hotel room. He's about to go fight Superman and she's looking at the footage of all the other metahumans, and he's Dr. Silas Stone is using the tape recorder to talk about the mother box 61982 and
Cyborg. There's also a bunch of cassette tapes like on the table, like spilled out, like, you know.
Oh, so he bought the whole thing.
He's like burning through them.
Oh, Radio Shack was closing. Oh, okay. And he's just like, damn, I might as well buy all these tape recorders. Well, I guess that makes sense. I guess from someone who does that, they would be different labels for different projects. And he's like, well, instead of switching out the tapes, I would just have like 8 tape players. And
no, he's got them all on his little side.
Okay. You're talking about he has different cassette tapes. I thought you were saying he was okay. I'm sorry.
In the Dr. Pepper promotional minute, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper.
Also, the Dr. Pepper we saw when Bruce Wayne was driving through the Black Zero event, and there was the graffiti of Dr. Pepper on the wall.
Yeah,
yeah. Brought to you by Dr. Pepper. I had one today.
You remember the Dr. Pepper commercials when this movie was coming out, right?
Nathan, I told you I can't even remember Isildur's name. How am I supposed to remember commercials? I remember the Emirates, Bruce Wayne, Lex Luthor ones, airplane ones.
I don't remember that. There was...
I remember them being on a big, rich plane and saying, this is why I always fly Emirates, because
No, I don't know. I never saw that.
Being on a plane and Superman.
I saw the Jeep commercials or the Rogue, whatever it was. It was a Jeep Rogue.
Yeah, the car. Yeah, the car one, the Jeep one.
I think it was Ben Affleck in a car and he was driving real fast. But it was just footage from the movie.
Yep.
Anyway.
I didn't know it was all these cassette players. I thought you were saying he was having multiple tape recorders and that he would just pick one up, record, and put it down if he had different projects, which could probably a cool idea, actually. Different projects, different tape recorder. Don't have to switch out. Just pick up the right one. That's probably stupid. You would probably pick up the wrong one.
But the same concept applies with the tapes.
Yeah, but I'm saying he doesn't have to switch it out for every single
project. You just
need
the one recorder for and use different tapes. So the only thing you're switching out is the tapes. Like it's intended use. What are you talking about?
But then I'm the type of guy who has like different spoons when I'm cooking. So it's like I'm not going to use the same spoon and wash it out. I'm going to just switch
it. It's different because you would have to go back and wash it, but like changing the tape to a new... changing the cassette to a new cassette is a one-in-one. It's also the same... Like, that's the same idea as getting a different spoon. You're getting a different tape. Okay, you're not cooking... So, okay. Fuck. Well, I was going to say, like, it's like using one pot, but you would use multiple pots.
I would use multiple... I really tried to be a one pot.
So like if you're making like college kid spaghetti, it's a one pot thing, right? You only need the one pot.
Yeah.
So it's the one tape recorder.
Yeah.
There's probably way better analogies, but I hope someone learned something.
That you can cook spaghetti in one pot.
Or more of just like, they got whatever the message is from, you know, our analogies here.
Anyways, one tape recorder, many cassette tapes, micro cassette tapes. Sorry.
You never had to have this for band class?
A cassette tape? A tape?
Yeah. How did you record yourself to give to the teacher? Like you didn't have to do that? Yeah, we did.
I had to do it in person. I had to perform in person. Maybe hand it's cassette tape. I could easily get someone to do it for me.
You never had to record yourself? And
I would so totally get someone else to do that for me if that was the case.
Dang, yeah. That's what I got. I like went out and bought a cassette player, and I'm pretty sure I still have it. Like when I was in sixth grade, like learning how to play trombone, it was like, oh, I need to buy this. So I can like listen back to myself and also like, you know, send my stupid little tapes in.
You know what I did have though? I had a Talkboy.
Like the from Home Alone, the toy that he had, the little had one of those too.
Yeah, I had two of them.
Same thing.
Yeah. I was using that Talkboy a lot cuz it was funny. It was cool what you could do with it. A little ahead of its time too, I think. I don't know.
It was kind of like a niche. Like I was old. I mean, I really liked mine because it was just it was like a recording. It was just like a thing that had like, oh, there's a tape in here. Like I like that. I like VHS tapes. I like cassette tapes. I like that kind of shit. I like the.
You could play. I think you could just play music with it. I think you could put like an actual cassette tape in and just play it. Yeah. Like a radio, like a cassette player. Duh.
Like a hit clip.
I don't know about that. one of those things that keeps coming around in conversations.
Those were fun.
The hit clips.
It's a fun concept, too.
Hit clips. They were like TikTok, but hardware.
Yeah. And like nothing else. Not really that much fun. It was just the music. It was just 30 seconds of, or a minute.
Paying $2 for a ringtone. That was a MIDI version of a song.
My buddy had one, and the only thing he had for it was Baha Men's Who Let the Dogs Out. So it was just like, and it was just the Who Let the Dogs Out part.
Of course.
If you knew the kid, he'd be like, dang, so you were listening to just Who Let the Dogs Out part on repeat for 30 seconds as you were a child growing up? Like, That was your musical intake? No wonder you turned out this way.
What kind of hit clips did you have?
I didn't have it.
I didn't have any.
I almost name dropped him. It was my friend's. He had the hit clip. I think Scott had one too, but I don't know.
Yeah, hit clips and the scanners. Those two Scott's. Things I didn't get into that I was like, that seems like a waste of time.
Scanners was a new thing for me. I didn't know that. I don't even think that I remember that like existing.
The scanners where you had to like scan barcodes to collect monsters and then battle.
Like I remember like, that, but I feel like it wasn't called scanners.
It's called, I don't know.
But like when our other friend told us about that, I was like, oh no, there's like, it's the same thing, but like a different UI.
It's scanners, but with a Z because it was, and a K. Yeah. And
I guess it was, I don't know.
S-K-A-N-N-E-R-Z. Scanners. Yeah. Very, very strange. Going a little bit about this minute here. So the biggest thing that happens in this minute, obviously, is the rebuilding of the cassette player. Yeah. And he rebuilds the cassette player and comes back into his hand. And I want to talk about the hand itself because I think, which is as tradition, I think it could be Zack Snyder's hand because he does this a lot. We talk about the famous Zack Snyder hand shots. It flips over again almost exactly the way that Batman's hand did when he was stealing the data from Anatoly Kanyaev in Dawn of Justice. And it almost flips around the same way. And I'm like, maybe it's Zack Snyder's hand again. And he was like, hey, I want you to CG my hand. Cause that's
yeah.
Like,
I mean, like cool. Maybe that's just like the reference that they use, but the fact that it's like all CG,
mm-hmm.
it kind of like, I don't know. To me, it's like, eh.
Oh, you think there's no model behind it? You think it's full CG? No.
No. I do think there's a model behind it, and it very well could have been just another Zack Snyder hand shot.
Stock footage.
But the fact that it is CG completely, it's just kind of, it's less interesting than the phone duplication and, you know,
mm-hmm.
other things.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be willing to bet and just be like, was this you? This your hand? You're doing this bit again? And he'd be like, yeah, that was me. I wanted to be a CG hand this time. And I'd be like, oh, that's kind of cool of you to keep wanting to do that. Again, I'll have to look at Rebel Moon and see if there's any hand shots in there. But then, so there's a hand shot in the next shot where Cyborg presses the play button in there. You like rewinds it and then presses play. We talked about this back in the Metamorphosis episode, I think, or in that week where he does this. And I always talked about how it was really cool about kind of like the small little pivots in the joints, kind of like seeing Cyborg's joints, how they work as far as like robotics. I always enjoy seeing robotics like that happen.
Yeah.
Kind of the physics of it. And
I like a really good rivet at like a joint, like Gundam, where they have like just like massive cylinders at like the ankle points. It's like, that's sick. Pacific Rim, where it shows like the diesel engines turning the like, mm-hmm. but it's like, that's sick. I want to see that. I don't want it to be a smooth freaking robot.
One of my favorites will always be the 1984 Terminator, where he like does surgery on his forearm and he cuts it open. And you see all like the little pistons as he pulls his fingers in and out.
Yeah.
And I just love that because like technically our hands do that.
They did it. Well, they did it in the Star Wars too.
Oh yeah. They do it in the Star Wars. Yeah. Terminator did it. It was cooler.
Terminator did it first.
They didn't do it first, but it was cooler. Yeah. Now that I think about it. That was Return of the Jedi was 1983 and Terminator was 1984. It's very close, but they seem like they're kind of distant technology wise.
No, it wasn't Return of the, it was Empire Strikes Back. It was at the end of Empire Strikes Back.
I know. 1980 was Empire Strikes Back and where they get the robotic hand. But I was just thinking like how far away Star Wars was from Terminator because it seems like kind of a jump, at least quality of picture. So Cyborg builds the tape recorder back together and then he presses in the play button and it starts playing. And this time it's, you know, there's the sunlight coming into the room, illuminates the room. Very different if we were to compare this to the minute from way back when, where you would see the same exact shot, but one is in night, and then this one is in the daytime, and you kind of see the same kind of motion of the hand pressing the play button or pressing stop. And I just thought that was just really cool parallel, kind of palindrome, but kind of not, because it's in the middle of the movie, and this is at the end, instead of it, there being a shot like that in the beginning, but still...
Well, it's a palindrome to his story.
Yes.
His arc.
There's poetry to this that's happening. And then, of course, as he's listening to his father's words, he glances over. He glances over at the portraits of his family. And this, you know, as you were saying, Nate, being kind of like our new Superman of the modern age, these photographs, they really do seem like they also parallel Clark with his parents, Ma and Pa Kent, back in Smallville.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought you were gonna mention that there's a dog. There's a really nice photo of a dog. They had a dog. Yeah. I love that.
Always gotta have one.
Maybe he'll get another dog when he's feeling a little bit better.
Maybe get a robot dog. That'd be cool.
Robot dog.
He could just make a robot dog. Like he could just make up. Here, take the third arm, right, that he has in his back, and just remove the extra arms and just turn it into a dog. Be like, look, yeah. I got a dog now. I got a mother box dog. A mother box dog? Are you kidding me? In this economy, this is crazy. Mother box dog. Make it happen.
It's like a video game companion.
That is like a Transformer. That's like a Ravager or...
Well, they're also kind of like, they do their own evil things, but like if the dog is...
Yeah, but a good
more one. Of like a cuddler.
Are there good microbots?
Yes, there's a whole cartoon about them. Yeah. The Minicons.
The Minicons, that's what they're called. Wait, if they're Minicons, are they good? It's Minicons as mini Decepticons. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. That show was...
Which one are you talking about?
Yeah.
What show? Transformers Prime?
No, so Prime is the 3D CGI one. It was Transformers, the one that we watched, the one that was airing when we were in high school at 6 a.m.
Mm, okay.
The good one. It was like anime, and then the action sequences had that like smoothed out animation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Computer animation. Yeah, they had Minicons in that one, and like the second season or like the second half of the show, the later episodes were about them finding them and I guess like turning them into good guys. It was like we gotta find all these guys. Because they're just like, you know, lost children or some shit, whatever it was. But yeah, there's good ones. So, if you ask me their names,
I couldn't tell you because I only remember the Minicons that are bad. So
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
But Perceptor should have one, but I don't really remember because I think also Perceptor was like one of the guys that like stayed on Cybertron, so like he had to be. it's like a Nazi scientist, right? He like had to be a Decepticon because he was like, well, I'm like the best doctor on Cybertron, so I have to stay here. There's a war going on. Anyway, turned him around.
Yeah. So always end up talking about Transformers. I'm sorry.
I can talk to you all day about Transformers and talk to you like a normal person and not like a friggin' like 8-year old that just like that wants to see a cool robot car. It's like, wait, no, hang on. They're like there's whole character arcs and shit. Like it was there's a lot going on.
I have one more note for this minute, so bear with me, and I don't mean to hold up the tangent any longer about Transformers, but I think I've said this on other shows recently. I think I've said it twice now, but I don't know if I told you specifically, but like Transformers has ruined my mind when it comes to vehicles. And like if I see a cement truck, I'm like, that's Mixmaster, you know? Like
That should be a good thing. That's like knowing like hard dinosaur names, dude.
That's like knowing dinosaur names. That is, yeah. That's literally, but my mind is like ruined now. It's like,
I see
a jet, like a bomber jet, and I'm like, that's Jetfire. Like, I know which one that is.
I have such a hard time remembering their names. Like, it'll take, there's some of them, but like, it's like the deep cut ones where it's like, man, what was that guy's name? Anyway.
Yeah.
That's awesome that like you would like see that kind of stuff and be like, oh, I know that because that model of a car is, or whatever, that thing was modeled after this Transformer. So I know what that thing is.
Yeah. And I think the reason that it's so engraved in my mind is because they are Constructicons and there's construction all the time everywhere. Wherever you go, there's construction vehicles. So obviously there's a cement truck and like a, you know, bulldozer or like a dump truck. And you're just like, yeah, that's Bone Crusher. That's Long Haul. Like, I know these guys. That's, what are the other ones? I think the Scoop is literally like the Scoop one. Like
construction vehicle. Like the backhoe. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I know what these, it's like, yeah, it's Mixmaster. It's like,
I think I always thought Decepticon names were even harder to remember in my opinion.
Or like, I'll see like a, I don't know, like a red, I don't know, like a red Mazda Miata. And I'll be like, that would be like what Cliff Jumper was, you know?
See, like, Cliff, Jesus, like you're pulling these guys out of your ass now. I would have immediately gone to like, okay, like what, red car, this, Hot Rod?
Or, no, he was, you know, Hot Rod was the yellow one. That was like,
he was like, orange, baby.
But he was like, Bumblebee is to like Barry Allen that like, would you just say Hot Rod? Was that his name?
Yeah, Hot Rod would be to like Wally West.
Yeah, kind of. And
yeah,
it's like, kinda. I grew up with Hot Rod and Wally West, and now all of a sudden we're back to Bumblebee,
yeah,
and Barry Allen, and it's like, okay, that's not who I grew up with, and everyone wants to pretend that we didn't go through a whole phase where they were just like,
it's
no, like,
there's nothing wrong with Bumblebee. It's just.
Or Barry Allen.
What happened to Hot Rod? Is he still on Cybertron? If so, we got to go save him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got RC in the mix. Like, I mean,
yeah, they brought back RC. Yeah. They like lately there's been a push to be like, oh yeah, remember that RC is like part of the group. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, like, I mean, they're pulling like the main from like Transformers, mm-hmm. the movie. It's like, okay, so it's just a matter of time where like Weird Al is going to come back to reprise his little Mad Max garbage planet Transformer guy.
Yeah. Anyways, Cliff Jumper's in that mix of Hot Rod, Bumblebee and stuff. Actually, Cliff Jumper, yeah, he died in that Bumblebee movie. Now that I think about it, they sliced him in half. They cut him down. They cut my boy down. Absolutely massacred.
What car was he?
He was red. He was the red one. He looked like a red Bumblebee and he was on a different planet. And the Team Rocket looking Decepticons, they said, oh, thank you for the information. And then they cut him in half.
Mm.
And that's how that movie went. Good movie. Fantastic movie. Anyways, again, I wanted to talk a little bit in this minute about the apartment. I know we talked about this before, but this time we're getting a different angle of this apartment. Really nice Gotham apartment. The little entrance, the little foyer here has these little... I never knew what these things were called, but in my
glass partition.
Yeah. In Miami, we had these a lot.
Oh, yeah.
In my house and in the houses that I lived
in. Yeah. These were in a lot of like
modern.
Well, I don't even know. Cause like I grew up in Orlando, right? So like every single office, doctor's office, dentist office, these had these. Even the Wendy's had it.
Yeah, when we were talking about Wendy's, it was like this.
We were. But like even the Wendy's did have this, because the Wendy's that I grew up going to did not have a sunroom. The one with the sunroom was like further down. So that one we didn't really go to that often. But the Wendy's that like I grew up going to had this like glass partition in it, and then it closed as a Wendy's sometimes in like the mid 2000s. And it became an optometry office. And I remember thinking, like, oh, my God, like, it became that because it had the glass, fucking warped partition wall on it. It was like, it was perfect for it.
Yeah, they're like, just, that's awesome. That's amazing. Yeah. When I say modern architecture, I mean modern with like that capital M of the 80s and 90s. I think that was called modern, which seems silly now as time goes on. But like, that was that modern aesthetic. It was like, oh, we have to have this glass tile that like comes out here.
It's a nice, it's like clear and not multicolored like it was in the 70s or whatever.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I don't know about you, but in Orlando, but growing up in Miami, it was like this, and all porcelain was like pink.
Yeah, we did have a lot of that in Florida. It's just I think we're subject to way more of it. A lot of old Florida here, especially in like Winter Park and stuff like that. It's like, oh yeah, that's like all, you still got like carpet in your bathroom kind of shit. Yeah. It's like, damn, like this is, I smell the rotting cedar when I walked inside. Like this sucks. It's just wet. It's just a wet wooden frame and concrete that can't hold up against anything.
Yeah.
You know, and we get hurricanes and we get 70 mile an hour winds every single fucking year. Yeah, I get what you mean. I think you had a lot of, you had more exposure to the pastel.
Yeah, that modern aesthetic was big.
And I am so jealous of it.
Yeah, I think I didn't appreciate it as much at the time, but now I do.
I did grow up in a pink porcelain bathroom. Like
pink porcelain bathroom.
I don't think the toilet was, but
yeah. It's a pink porcelain bathroom and bathrooms in Miami. Yeah. Bathrooms in Miami, they also had bidets. Like not bidets like we have them here now in modern time where they're part of the toilet. Like it was a separate commode.
Like you had two like toilets. The shallow one that just had the faucet on it.
Yeah, and like that seems like, was I living in like the prequel era? Like, were we just like more civilized back then that we had that, and like now we don't?
It seems
so weird to me.
No, it was just like at that time, the houses that were built were only, you know, not brand new, they were like at least like 10 years old or something. So they were up to date with like their stuff. And then by the time you were living in them, it was like, okay, we're not really up to date, but we're on the tail end, but there's still, you know, use from this because it's only, 'cause it's only 1994. You know what I mean? It's like, so there's still things here, and this was built in the 70s kind of deal.
Yeah. What a time.
Yeah.
For Miami.
But by mid 2000s, like we were having to replace everything, all the, you know, appliances and remodeling everything.
The recession happened. They said we can't be building houses anymore with two commodes. Not enough porcelain to go around.
Like, I don't even mid to that. It was early 2000s was when my mom started doing all that stuff in like our Florida house.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of Florida things, as you would think them, especially like 90s, like suburban 90s things. I had a whole Florida room.
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I bring it up and I want to talk about it on the podcast, of course, because it's like thinking of the apartments here that we've seen. Now we have two. Now, we've seen Lois Lane's. We've talked about it so much. It is what it is. But then she's living in a Metropolis apartment. And then now we're seeing a Gotham apartment. And maybe we've talked about comparing them before, but I don't remember. And just looking at it now, just trying to think about the difference here. It is a tighter space. Like it is almost, if not a one bedroom, it's a studio. Like there's this big open floor plan and like, that's it.
It's gotta be a two bedroom.
I don't even know if it's that.
Cyborg's gotta have a room.
And maybe he does, but we haven't seen it. He's been staying in that dining table. Remember that he would just kind of sit there and like power on and power down and just like in the theatrical cut he has his own room. I guess I remember that, but like we don't ever see both of them anyways. It just looks like a really small apartment for a Gotham apartment, just comparing it to Metropolis, the kind of condo that Lois Lane has. It's just interesting to think about.
Yeah, it's also two different, vastly different characters and their priorities, especially, you know, especially after Silas and everything. Like, they left the house because, obviously, the accident, right? We're led to believe that. And so, with your quarter of a son hooked up and staying at Star Labs, I don't think your priority is to find a place to live. Like, yeah, you know, I don't know what the insurance company was probably like, oh, we'll put you up here. No, it's nicer than that, right? I mean, it's a higher class Gotham area.
For sure. The government, you know? The government budget, the government salary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tighter spaces. Yeah. I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
Lois Lane, just like, again, Lois Lane's apartment is just kick ass. It's huge. It's awesome. Like, you can spend the rest of your life there. You can't raise a family here. It's like, yeah, but look at this apartment. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap up for today. If you've enjoyed today's show, please consider leaving a 5-star review. It really does help the show and helps new listeners discover our show as well. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can chat with us on Twitter at @DCEUMinute. And if you'd like to hear more bonus content, we also have a Patreon for just $3 with tons of other podcasts to listen to. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next one here on DC Cinematic Minute.